Uchur nishidhitastamste Vaivasvata purasura Keyuyam pratishedharo Dharma rajasya shasanam Uchu replied Nishedhita, being forbidden, tan, to the order carriers of Lord Vishnu, te, they, vaivasvata, of Yamaraj, pura saraha, the assistants or messengers, ke, who, yuyam, all of you, pratishedhara, who are opposing Dharma Rajasya of the king of religious principles, Yamaraj, Shasanam, the ruling jurisdiction. Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation, when the order carriers of Yamaraj, the son of the sun god, were thus forbidden, they replied, who are you, sirs, that have the audacity to challenge the jurisdiction of Yamaraj? Purport, according to the sinful activities of Ajamila, he was within the jurisdiction of Yamaraj, the supreme judge appointed to consider the sins of the living entities. When forbidden to touch Ajamila, the order carriers of Yamaraj were surprised because they had never been hindered in the execution of their duty by anyone within the three worlds. So any questions? Pretty clear commentary. The Yamadutas were shocked that someone would stop them because they're under the authority of Yamaraj, who is here called as Dharma Rajasya Shashanam. He's the king of religious principles, Yamaraj. Is the king of religious principles. His son is Yudhishthira Maharaj. He's also called Dharmaraj. He's the king of religious principles, and he has jurisdiction over all entities who commit sinful activities. Understand? So the Yamadutas had never before been stopped by anyone who was sinful. Ajamil clearly led a sinful life, so therefore he was clearly within the jurisdiction of Yamaraj, Dharmaraj. Who has jurisdiction over the sinful entities, and yet they were stopped by the Vishnudutas, so they were shocked by this because it had never happened before. And so they want an explanation. Why is this taking place? Any questions, comments? No. Next verse. Kasyava kuta ayata Kasmat asya nishedhata Kimdeva upadevaya Yuyam kim siddhasattamaha. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki. Translation, dear sirs, whose servants are you? Where have you come from? And why are you forbidding us to touch the body of Ajamila? Are you demigods from the heavenly planets? Are you sub-demigods? Or are you the best of devotees? Siddhasattamaha. Purport. The most significant word used in this verse is Siddhasattamaha, which means the best of the perfect. In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, verse 3, it is said, Manushyanam sarhasreshu Kashchit yatiti siddhaye. Out of millions of persons, one may try to become siddha, perfect, or in other words, self-realized. A self-realized person knows that he is not the body, but a spiritual soul, aham brahmasmi. At the present moment, practically everyone is unaware of this fact, but one who understands this has attained perfection and is therefore called siddha. When one understands that the soul is part and parcel of the Supreme Soul, and one thus engages in the devotional service of the Supreme Soul, one becomes Siddhasattamaha. One is then eligible to live in the Vaikuntha planets or Krishna Loka. The word Siddhasattama therefore refers to a liberated, pure devotee. Since the Yamadutas are servants of Yamaraj, who is also one of the Siddhasattamas, they knew that a Siddhasattama is above the demigods and sub-demigods, and indeed above all the living entities within this material world. The Yamadutas therefore inquired why the Vishnudutas were present where a sinful man was going to die. It should also be noted that Ajamila was not yet dead, for the Yamadutas were trying to snatch the soul from his heart. They could not take the soul, however, and therefore Ajamila was not yet dead. This will be revealed in later verses. Ajamila was simply in an unconscious state when the argument was in progress between the Yamadutas and the Vishnudutas. The conclusion of the argument was to be a decision regarding who would claim the soul of Ajamila. Sounds scary. Who would claim the soul of Ajamila? Understand? Siddhasattamaha. Prabhupada's purport is on this word, Siddhasattamaha. They are asking, who are you people? Are you demigods? Are you sub-demigods? Are you the best of all persons? Siddhasattamaha. Prabhupada says, Siddha means one who understands the difference between body and soul. This is called the Siddha. Manusharam saharsheshu kashche yatati siddhaye. Hardly anyone is trying to become Siddha. Everyone is too much distracted by duality to care about becoming Siddha, isn't it? I already explained yesterday. Itra dvesha samutena. Due to the impressions of desire and hate from previous lives, itra dvesha samutena, due to desires, impressions. You understand impressions, vasanas? When you do stuff in this life, it creates impressions, and those impressions are fixed in your subtle body. And you carry your subtle body with you and all the material bodies, gross material bodies, until you're liberated. Understand? So all those impressions are in the subtle body. So itra dvesha samutena, due to the impressions of desire and hate, dwanda mohena bharata. Everyone is bewildered by duality, isn't it? Isn't it? We understand practically what Krishna is saying. Everything he says is very practical. We can understand. Direct perception. Patyaksha avagama. Then he says, sarvabhutani sammoham. They're completely bewildered. Samyak moham. Completely bewildered like this. Sarge yanti panantapa. Born into samsara. Birth after birth like this. So hardly anyone is interested in becoming siddha. But out of those who come to appreciate the transitory nature of material existence, usually by association with sadhus, someone comes to appreciate that everything is material and ephemeral. This realization draws to question the utility of anything that they're doing in life, isn't it? Once a person comes to appreciate the ephemeral nature of material existence, that immediately draws into question their life. What is the point of my life? I am working so hard for so many things which will anyway be destroyed by time. So what is the point in working so hard? If anyone comes to appreciate, therefore it's very important principle of material nature not to think. Very important principle. If you want to try to stay happy in the material world, very important not to think. Because if you think too much and you also don't have faith in transcendence, it creates insanity actually. That's what happens to all these existential philosophers. They make these poor students study in school. All these existential philosophers, they thought too much, they were too much philosophical, and they had no faith in transcendence, at least a vast majority of them. So many of them ended up in the asylum, committing suicide. That is the result. Too much thinking leads to this result. When you come to appreciate that material existence is actually ephemeral, then you start to question, what is the point of anything that I'm doing? Then material existence, or anything that I'm doing in this material world, either has arbitrary purpose, but no inherent purpose. Arbitrary purpose means whatever I give to it, but there's no actual purpose. That's for those who have no faith in transcendence. And for those who have faith in transcendence, they search for the meaning. What is the actual meaning of all this? Understand? So most living entities, they are, after sense gratification, they cannot understand anything. But out of those millions, a few of them come to appreciate the ephemeral nature. They draw to question their existence, and they have some faith in transcendence. Then, in due course of time, they become siddhas. Understand? They become siddhas by practice of yoga. They become siddha. They understand the difference between matter and spirit, body and soul. Then, out of those who become Siddha, then very few become Siddha Sattama, those who are devoted to the personality of Godhead. Krishna says that, Yatatam api siddhanam kashchen mam veti tattvatah. Out of those who become Siddha, hardly one knows me in truth. Why is that? Hardly one knows me in truth? Because they don't accept bhakti. Because only by bhakti you can come to know the Supreme. Bhakti amam abhijananti. So Krishna, only by bhakti you can know the Supreme. So they do not accept this bhakti process. So they may be Siddha, but they're not Siddha Sattamaha. But for those who accept the path of bhakti, they become Siddha Sattamaha. They can understand the Supreme Lord, Vishate Tadanantaram, and they go to the Supreme Lord also. Isn't it? Then what is it? So then the Yamadutas, they knew that Yamaraj, she is also a Siddha Sattama. So they could recognize that the Vishnudutas, they must be Siddha Sattama too. They could immediately understand, although they asked as a matter of course, are you demigods? Are you sub-demigods or are you Siddha Sattama? Because they knew what a Siddha Sattama is because they associate with Yamaraj. So they knew they were Siddha Sattamas, but they were shocked that if you are Siddha Sattama, then you can understand this person is a simple person. Why are you stopping us if you're the best of persons? So they became bewildered, actually. Such is the nature of Vaishnavas. They're bewildering, actually. Not so easy to understand. And so Prabhupada's last paragraph here says that the Yamadutas had not yet taken the soul from the body of the of Ajamila, he who was called Ajamila. And so there was going to be a discussion, Bhagavatam class. And the result of this Bhagavatam class is who will get the soul of Ajamila. So this is a very important Bhagavatam class. Of course, like us, Ajamila was unconscious during the class. But the result of the class was very important for him, even though he was unconscious. Are there any questions? This is the purport. Yeah.
So we see later on that the Yamadutas express like surprise because they thought that Yamaraj was the ultimate authority. So in context of that understanding, how do we understand that they're able to recognize devotees? Because it seems like for them, the highest position one could attain is to be like a servant of Yamaraj because they think Yamaraj is the highest authority. So I'm not able to understand how they're able to recognize devotees or Siddha Sattamas. Why would that question even pop up into their minds? But then later on they express surprise that, oh, we thought Yamaraj was the highest authority.
I'm not really clear on the question. They knew Yamaraj, Siddha Sattama. So by seeing them, they can make out. And they will speak a few more verses, the next verse. By your effulgence, you're removing darkness. You are also opposing our authority, which no one has ever been able to do before. The only person who could do that possibly is Yamaraj himself, as far as their knowledge is concerned. And yet you are stopping us. Therefore, you must be at least in the same category. So that was bewildering them. And then that comes up later on. They actually become mad at Yamaraj. They go to Yamaraj, third chapter. What is this? We thought you were the topmost god. And someone else has stopped us? What is his business? And he has to explain to them what is his actual ontological position. So they by understanding the position of Yamaraj, they can make out. They must be of similar position. Who else can stop us? Who else's effulgence can remove darkness out of the atmosphere and so on? So these are obviously very exalted persons. So they're not exactly sure, so they're inquiring. But from the purport, we get the hunches that there must be Siddha Sattamas. They must be very exalted personalities. So then they ask about it. They inquire.
This verse, Manushinam Sahasri Shukashinadhi, said the rarity of pure devotional service, even though the soul is intrinsically part and parcel of Krishna and has love for Krishna within the heart intrinsically, is the rarity because there isn't sufficient, activities that inculcate Sukriti or leave Sukriti-type impressions upon the minds of the conditioned souls?
The rarity is because Maya is very strong. So no one wants to take bhakti. Everyone is inclined either towards sense gratification or mental speculation. But then you tell them, surrender yourself. No. That is an issue. Either boga, tyaga, enjoyment or speculation, but you say, surrender your soul. No, I will not surrender my soul. So, that is very rare that someone wants to do that. Therefore, Shukadeva Goswami also say, Kechit. Kechit, few people will do. Few people will be inclined towards surrendering their soul to Krishna. And who is those few persons that are inclined to surrender their soul to Krishna? Those who associate with devotees. Because they will help us to appreciate our prospects that come from surrendering to God. Whereas others cannot see that. On their own strength, they cannot appreciate that reality. Any other questions? Yeah.
Is the difference between people who have faith in transcendence and like the existential philosophers who do not have any faith in transcendence but may have some idea of the ephemeral nature of material reality, is that also association with devotees?
Yeah, devotees or sages, you know, in previous life. So you don't have sufficient sangha with saintly persons. Therefore, their faith in transcendence hasn't been awakened. Therefore, their thinking leads them to a disastrous result oftentimes. Yes, to gain faith in transcendence requires the association of saintly persons who are tattva-darshis, right? They see the truth. And seeing means they're experiencing it practically. So then when they convey that truth to us in language, their words have a lot of shakti, enough shakti to induce faith in the heart that there is something to transcendence. Like when we hear like some of our friends who smoking marijuana and he speaks about cosmic consciousness and all these things, then one always brings into question the actual level of his realization. Whereas when you meet like a saintly person, you know, sometimes you meet a saintly person, immediately you just want to bow down. And you're like, what am I doing? Stop. Sometimes it happens like that. You meet a saintly person, immediately you just hit the floor. People don't know also what they're doing. They get up and like, whoa, what happened? Yeah, so the influence of saintly persons is such that it induces faith. Where otherwise you would not normally have faith, but in that sangha, faith is induced, generated, the faith of the soul. Satam prasangam avirya samvido is mentioned by association with satamas. Satam means saintly devotees who are situated in sat, truth. Then shraddha, rati, bhakti, ranukramishrati. Then they get shraddha, they get rati, they get bhakti in this order. Kapila Dev says this. Such is the influence of sangha. Any other questions? Yeah. Okay.
Do the Vishnudutas, do they descend from Vaikuntha? Or the
yes. Pulsa?
Okay.
Yeah, I thought this point you were making was very interesting about how if you don't have faith in transcendence and you think too much, you might end up just killing yourself because you realize life has no purpose. So I was thinking in terms of like when we go out and meet college students, it seems like those who are just sense gratifiers are a little bit more favorable than those who are too analytical. Would you agree or?
Well, I don't see the sense gratifiers showing up to the programs too much. And that those who are too analytical are condemned by their own speculations. And they're condemned to eventually take up sense gratification also. Many of them who speculate a lot, they also end up in the bar at Thursday night with the rest of everyone else. I used to meet so many philosophy students at DePaul University, and they would be speaking so much nonsense to me, but they thought they were so intelligent because they could use big words and so on. And then I would ask them, do you go to the bar on Thursday? Because I knew DePaul Thursday night was the bar night. All the students used to go to the bars. They had a lot of bars just nearby. So Thursday night, they used to go to the bars and drink and all that. So after they would spend so much time with me speculating, I would ask them, do you go to the bar on Thursday? That would be my not very non-philosophical question. Do you go to the bar? Oh, I also go to the bar. What is the use of your philosophizing? What is the use? Those who are not philosophizing come to the same conclusion as you, going to the bar. What is the use of your philosophizing? It's a useless thing. Simply wasting so much of time and energy. So both are actually condemned. Sense gratifiers and mental speculators, both of them are condemned by their own actions and mental speculations. God need not condemn them. They condemn themselves by their foolishness, the inability to accept any master above them. They don't want to accept any master. Someone can be master over them. But then they want to write books for people to listen to them. What is this nonsense? You will not accept any master, but you want to write books so other people will read it and accept you. So what is it? What is this? You have not learned from a master, but you will speculate something and you want people to read that. What is the use of that? No one will accept, except those who are equally foolish, which is not a flattering statement whatsoever. Any other points, comments? Okay, we'll read one more verse since it's only 7:54. Next verses. Sarve Padma Pala Shaksha Pita Koshaya Vasasa Kirtina Kundalino Kirtina Kudalino Sorry Kirtina Kundalino Lasat Pushkara Malina Sarve cha nutnavayasa Sarve charu chatur bhuja Dharnur nishanghasi gada Shanka chakram bhuja shriya Disho vittimira loka Kurvanta swinate jasa Kim artam dharma palasya Kinkara no nishedhata. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Translation. The order carries and Yamaraj said, your eyes are just like the petals of lotus flowers. Dressed in yellow silken garments, decorated with garlands of lotuses, and wearing very attractive helmets on your heads and earrings on your ears, you all appear fresh and youthful. Your four long arms are decorated with bows and quivers of arrows, and with swords, clubs, conch shells, discs, and lotus flowers. Your effulgence has dissipated the darkness of this place with extraordinary illumination. Now, sirs, why are you obstructing us? Purport, before even being introduced to a foreigner, one becomes acquainted with him through his dress, bodily features, and behavior, and can thus understand his position. Therefore, when the Yamadutas saw the Vishnudutas for the first time, they were surprised. They said, by your bodily features, you appear to be very exalted gentlemen. And you have such celestial power that you have dissipated the darkness of this material world with your own effulgences. Why then should you endeavor to stop us from executing our duty? That's the end of their statement, quote. It will be explained that the Yamadutas, the order carriers in Yamaraj, mistakenly considered Ajamila sinful. That's an important statement. It was a mistake. They did not know that although he was sinful throughout his entire life, he was purified by constantly chanting the holy name of Narayana. In other words, unless one is a Vaishnava, one cannot understand the activities of a Vaishnava. Understand? Don't try to size up a Vaishnava. Size him up with speculative eyes. The dress and bodily features of the residents of Vaikuntha Loka are properly described in these verses. The residents of Vaikuntha, who are decorated with garlands and yellow silken garments, have four arms holding various weapons. Thus, they conspicuously resemble Lord Vishnu. They look like God, in other words. They have the same bodily features as Narayana because they have attained the liberation of Sarupya. But they nevertheless act as servants. Understand? All the residents of Vaikuntha Loka know perfectly well that their master is Narayana or Krishna and that they are all his servants. They are all self-realized souls who are nitya mukta, everlastingly liberated. Although they could conceivably declare themselves Narayana or Vishnu, they never do so. Understand? Although they could conceivably declare themselves Narayana or Vishnu, they never do so. Understand? They never do so. They always remain Krishna conscious and serve the Lord faithfully. Such is the atmosphere of Vaikuntha Loka. Similarly, one who learns the faithful service of Lord Krishna through the Krishna consciousness movement will always remain in Vaikuntha Loka and have nothing to do with the material world. Understand? Very nice purport. So, first part of the purport, Prabhupada makes the point that by seeing a person's dress, his bodily features, and his behavior, you can come to understand his position. So when the Yamadutas saw the dress of the Vishnu Dutas, their bodily features, which were exquisite, exquisitely, drop-dead gorgeous, yes. Even the Vaikuntavasis, even the males, they were drop-dead gorgeous. If you would see them, you immediately you would faint seeing such beauty. And their behavior contradicted that beauty and their dress. So that was bewildering the Vishnu Dutas. You are so beautiful. Your effulgence is dissipating the darkness of this place. And your dress, obviously your exalted personalities, but yet you're stopping us from taking a sinful man. This is contradictory. They became bewildered. So they're asking, why are you doing like this? So Prabhupada points out here that they mistakenly considered Ajamil a sinful person. It was a mistake. What do you mean it was a mistake? He was sinning and grinning all the way to the end of life. Isn't it? Sinning and grinning. We have this saying in America, sinning and grinning, like the Christians or something like that. All you have to do is believe in God, go on with your sinful activities. It's called sinning and grinning. Sinning on the strength of being a worshiper of God. Sinning and grinning. Of course, the result of that is down. Down you go for all your offenses. So they thought he was sinning and grinning until the end of his life. But Prabhupada says here, that was a mistake. They mistakenly thought he was a sinful person. Although, why was it a mistake? Because he had chanted the holy name of Narayana. He had been completely purified of all his sinful activities. So it was a mistake that they thought he was a sinful person. And then Prabhupada points out last sentence, in other words, unless one is a Vaishnava, he cannot understand the position of a Vaishnava. That's the most important statement. Lord Chaitanya says that to Sanatana Goswami also. He says, Yanna chitte Krishna prema karaya udhaye tana kriya tanura vakya kriya mudra igneha nabujay. Understand this? For Yanna chitte means for one and whose heart Krishna prema karaya udhaye, Krishna prema is awakened, then tana vakya kriya mudra, then his vakya, his kriya, vakya means his speech, his activities, mudra, his symptoms, vigneha, even if you are a learned scholar, nabujoy, you cannot understand. Sudurgama, very difficult to understand exalted personalities and whom prema has arisen. You understand that point? Very difficult to understand. Pradyumna Mishra was very exalted Vaishnav of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He wanted to understand what is Krishna Katha. So Mahaprabhu said, I do not know what is Krishna Katha. Whatever I know, I have heard from Ramananda Roy. You go to Ramananda Roy, he will tell you what is Krishna Katha. Pradyumna Mishra was very happy to hear this. He goes to see Ramananda Roy. So Ramananda Roy has one secretary there. He says, he is not available right now. You can take a seat. He'll come to you later. So Ramananda Roy is taking a long time. So Pradyumna Mishra, why is Ramananda Roy taking such a long time? So secretary told him, right now he's massaging the naked limbs of the Devi Dasis. Because in his play, he would train the Devi Dasis, dancing girls for Lord Jagannath, how to dance for the Lord with all the proper movements and facial expressions and so on. And after practice, he would massage their naked limbs with oils and so on. So Pradyumna Mishra, what? Well, this bhikkhu, it says, Vigneha Nabujaya. Even if you are a learned man, even a devotee, sometimes you get bewildered about the activities of Vaishnava. You know, what if massaging naked limbs with oil? Then he was like, I'm out of here. You know, so he left. So Lord Chaitanya said, did you go in here, Krishna Katha from Ramananda Ray? He was not available. Well, and then Lord Chaitanya can understand what his mind was thinking. He said, you rascal, you go in here, Krishna Katha from Ramananda Roy. He's a greater sannyasi than even myself. If I even touch a wooden doll of a woman, my mind will become agitated. But Ramananda Roy's mind never gets agitated. Even though he was doing such activity, his mind never gets agitated. You go back and hear Krishna Katha from him. So he's very bewildered. Of course, he had full faith in Lord Chaitanya. And he goes and hears Krishna Katha from Ramananda Roy. Such is one example. So it looks like, my point is, it looks like a sinful activity. But he's an exalted personality. Other example I gave previously, Vitrasura. Vitrasura is killing Vaishnavas, mixed devotees. Demigods are mixed devotees. They are Vaishnavas too. Just like us, we are mixed devotees. So suppose some demon ripped off the top of the building and he grabbed Atasha Krishna and chewed him up and threw him down and then grabbed Bhakta Alex, chewed him up. Then we would think, what a demon, he's definitely going to hell. We would think like that only, isn't it? How you cannot think in another way. If you were to see that, someone tries to challenge him, he just smashes him like a bug. That's what he was doing. He was stepping on the demigods, eating them whole. But he was an exalted Vaishnava, even though he was killing other Vaishnava, mixed devotees. But he was an exalted devotee of the Lord. By his consciousness, he was an exalted devotee of the Lord. Another example, Kali Krishna Das, he was rolling dice. He would take dice gambling. That's gambling, for breaking four regular principles. He would sit there, Hare Krishna. He would do like that, Hare Krishna, and gambling. But he was an exalted Vaishnava, topmost Vaishnava, full of Krishna prema. In fact, so exalted was his Krishna consciousness, he got a benediction that no one else was able to get because of his faith in Vaishnavas. It's described by Kaviraj Goswami that he got a result that no other Vaishnava can get, which was drinking the water that had washed the feet of Lord Chaitanya when Lord Chaitanya was going to up the stairs to enter Puri gate. So there would be one place where he would wash his feet. And Swarup Damodar and Ramananda Roy, they would guard that place so that no one could take that water because Lord Chaitanya was in the mood of a bhakta. So he didn't want anyone taking that water. But due to Kaliya Krishna Das' great faith in Vaishnavas, he got a benediction that no one else was able to do. When he came to that water, you know, he took one sip. Lord Chaitanya was standing there. He took another sip. Then he took another. And he was going for a fourth when Lord Chaitanya said, that's enough. And then it says because of his great faith in Vaishnavas, he got a benediction that no one else was able to get. Such was his consciousness, but he would gamble. So, Krishna consciousness cannot be measured by these external things, even behavior. You know, we think Vaishnava means one who is manifesting all the good qualities. Point is, he may or he may not manifest all the good qualities. The main quality is he is completely surrendered to Krishna. So, Vitrasura was completely surrendered to Krishna. Ramananda Roy was completely surrendered to Krishna. Kaliya Krishna Das, he was completely surrendered to Krishna. So they may have manifested other qualities which were apparently contrary to their surrender position. But their surrender position was not diminished because of that. Of course, they are exalted Vaishnavas. We can now, on the strength of these pastimes, say, don't judge me, Prabhu. Don't judge my consciousness. I am surrendered to Krishna also and doing simple activities. I said, I will not judge you. I'll just wait how long it will take you to get pulled out of Krishna consciousness. If we try to imitate exalted persons without that consciousness, then if we do those sinful things, then we'll be pulled out in due course of time. So I'll not judge you, but we only have to wait to see what will happen in due course of time. Of course, as merciful devotees, we may advise one another, stop our foolishness and do what is favorable to attain that consciousness. But for those who have such Krishna consciousness, even if they do certain activities which seem contrary to Vaishnavism and the qualities of a Vaishnava, that doesn't mean that their exalted position is diminished. So it is not easy to understand the position of a Vaishnava unless you are also a Vaishnava. Tanra Vakya Kriya Mudra Vigneha Nabujoy. If you are not, even if you are a learned person, what to speak if you are not a learned person? Even if you are a learned person, you can understand the Vakya Kriya Mudra of exalted Vaishnavas whose heart Krishna Prema is awakened. So with that principle, The Yamadutas were not able to understand Ajramil's exalted position. Yes, Ajramil's exalted. Even though, who else can remember the holy name of the Lord at the time of death? Not such an easy thing. Even those who are practicing sadhakas may not always be able to do it. So it's not such an easy thing to remember the holy name of Krishna at the time of death. He was completely purified by his chanting. Although it looked like he was a sinful person, he was not. So that's the first paragraph. Prabhupada says that first paragraph. Then second paragraph, Prabhupada speaks about the Vaikuntavasis and their position. And he describes here that they attain Sarupya Mukti. Sarupya Mukti means they have the same form as the Lord. So they practically look like Vishnu. Only difference between them and Vishnu is Vishnu has a little hair on the chest and a little jewel that the other Vaikuntavasis don't have. Otherwise, they look identical to Vishnu, such as their position, their beauty, their effulgence. And Prabhupada makes the point. They could conceivably consider them, call themselves Vishnu, because they look so much like Vishnu. They have form like Vishnu, weapons like Vishnu. Everything is also like Vishnu. So Prabhupada says they could conceivably declare themselves Narayana or Vishnu. But they never do that, because they are Nitya Mukta. They are always eternally having a favorable attitude towards Krishna. Nitya Mukta. Understand? Lord Chaitanya said there are two types of jivas in this world. Sevi Minamsha Jiva, Dui Taprakar. There are two types of jivas in this world. Eka Nitya Mukta. In this world means in existence. Not just in the material world, but in existence. There are two types of jivas. Eka Nitya Mukta. One is called as Nitya Mukta. Other one is called as Nitya Samsara. That's the word he uses. Nitya Bada also could be used. Nitya Samsara. Nitya Samsara means always revolving in this cycle of birth and death. Nitya Mukta means always favorable towards Krishna. So then he describes Nitya Mukta. He says, Nitya Mukta, Nitya Krishna Charane Umukha. That the Nitya Muktas are always Umuk. Umuk means they're favorable towards the service of Krishna's lotus feet. Krishna Charane Umuk. Nitya Krishna Charane Umuk. They're always favorable towards the services of Krishna. Krishna Parishara Nama, they are called as Krishna Parishara, Mbuje Seva Sukha, and they always enjoy the bliss of Seva. Always enjoying the bliss of Seva, understand? They always enjoy the bliss of Seva, understand? They always enjoy the bliss of Seva, understand? Krishna Dasa Abhimane, Ye Ananda Sindhu, Koti Brahma Sukha, Nahe Tara Eka Bindu. This is in the sixth chapter of the Adi Lila. That's the most perfect chapter to study if you want to understand what is seva tattva. What does it mean to be a servant? Because chapter six of the Adi Lila. There it is described, Krishna Dasa Abhimane. The Abhimana means conception. The conception of Krishna Dasa, Ye Ananda Sindhu, is an ocean of Ananda. Understand? A bottomless ocean of Ananda. Bottomless ocean. Understand? Bottomless ocean. Bottomless ocean in the material world is scary. It's scary. But bottomless ocean of Ananda is a bottomless ocean of bliss. Krishna Dasa Abhimane Ye Ananda Sindhu. The conception of service of Krishna is a bottomless ocean of Ananda. Koti Brahma Sukha. If you multiply the happiness of merging into Brahman 10 million times. Understand? If you multiply the happiness of Sayuja Mukti, merging into Brahman, 10 million times, Nahe Tara Eka Bindu, it would not equal one drop of that ocean of Ananda. Understand? Such is the bliss of the conception of servitude to Krishna. Understand? Are you understanding this point? That is the position of a Nitya Mukta. So Prabhupada says here, although they could conceivably declare, I am Vishnu, and try to enjoy thy Vishnu, they never do so. Why? What is the reason? Why they never declare themselves Vishnu, although they could conceivably do so? They're drowning in an ocean of Ananda, bottomless ocean of Ananda. Just like suppose someone took a helicopter and then dropped you in the middle of the ocean. Then, what is your position? Dead. What is your position? Miserable position, isn't it? But this is an ocean of Ananda. They're drowning in an ocean of Ananda. The Ananda of service to Krishna. But to speak of actually doing service to Krishna, just the conception gives him so much bliss. Isn't it? Like, in our mind, the conception of servitude makes us apprehensive. Isn't it? Servitude? Immediately when we first hear that, servitude? What do you mean service? Surrender and all these things. We become a little conditioned, so we become apprehensive. You should surrender your soul to the spiritual master. What? I remember one time Chandramali Maharaj came to the temple. My mother was visiting. He was here. My mother was visiting. So he was talking to my mother, and he was saying, "You have such a good son." And then he said, "He's very obedient." I was like, "Oh no, that was not the right thing to say to my mother." Because she was always like, "You shouldn't be obey." You know, she's a little paranoid. And in religion, you know, religion is kind of, they try to control people and manipulate people. So when Chandramali Maharaj said, "He is very obedient," I was like, "Oh no, this is the worst thing you could have said to her, you know." To be very obedient is a very good thing in Vedic culture, but in Western culture it's considered slavery. So when we hear about the conception of eternal servitude, makes us a little bit apprehensive. Just like you're washing pots, suppose we say this would be your eternal save in the spiritual world. You'll do nothing else. Immediately become apprehensive. What? Immediately become apprehensive. Well, I don't want to do that. I mean, I'm just doing this to get a little purification. I don't want to be doing my whole life. Immediately, isn't it? You will become apprehensive. And then sometimes you hear, like, Narottam Das Thakur is described that the way he left his body is he entered into an ocean and his body melted like milk. Because in the spiritual world, his eternal service is making milk for Krishna. So he said, he must do other things also. What is this eternally making milk? It must get boring. We are thinking like that. But my point is that the conception itself is Ananda Sindhu. But to speak of actually doing service to Krishna. Understand? The conception is itself making them blissful. They don't even have to do anything. Just to have the conception, the idea that I'm Krishna's servant makes them completely drown in an ocean of bliss. But to speak of actually doing service to Krishna, which they all get to do. Understand? The conception, just like the conception of enjoyership makes us happy, isn't it? Although our practical experiences, we suffer like anything, but we just conceive of ourselves in an enjoyership position and we feel blissful, isn't it? Sometimes when you don't have spouse, for example, Brahmachari is always meditating, romantic idea. Oh, how nice it would be. My wife will cook for me nicely. She will cook all the things that I can eat. So many Brahmacharis have told me like this in the past. And when I come home, she will treat me with great respect and yada yada, all these types of things. So then just by conceiving of that, they become blissful in an illusion. You say, "Prabhu, come back to earth." I'm sure same goes on for Mataji's also, isn't it? Same goes on, romantic idea of what it might be like, isn't it? It's both ways, isn't it? You don't know. Both ways. Men are not the only messed up persons. Women messed up too. Everyone's messed up in the material world. Everyone is messed up. It's not one-sided, both-sided. Men, women, both are messed up, isn't it? Conditioned life means messed up consciousness. So we are conceiving ourselves as enjoyers. Oh, how nice it would be. And that conception gives us happiness, but the practical experience is very miserable. Yes, isn't it? And the conception of servitude gives bliss. The conception is a bottomless ocean of bliss. And the actual rendering of service to Krishna is even more blissful. It's a bottomless ocean, so it cannot spread anymore, but still it is somehow spreading. That is, such is the nature of servitude to Krishna. Bunje seva sukha, so the nitya-muktas are always enjoying the bliss of service to Krishna. So Prabhupada says here, although they can conceivably declare themselves Vishnu, they never do so. It is not possible. Because they're, in fact, if you read Mahaprabhu's purport to the last verse of Shishashakam in the 20th chapter of the Anchalila, he describes what is the nature of prema. Nature of prema means that if it makes Krishna happy that I suffer, that is my happiness. Understand? If my suffering brings Krishna happiness, then that suffering is my happiness. That is the nature of prema. Those who have Krishna Dasa Abhimane, this prema seva attitude, there is no question of ever being envious of the position of Krishna. Because their suffering, if that brings Krishna pleasure, is their pleasure. That is the nature of prema. Mahaprabhu has described it. All these things are described. But to speak of the tiny jivas, even the Vishnu Tattva expansions have a conception of servitude towards Krishna. Let us speak of the tiny jiva. The huge living entity, Vishnu, he is also thinking that way. Understand? Understand the point I'm making? So Prabhupada says, although they can conceivably consider themselves God and try to compete with him, they never do so. Srimad Bhagavatam Sins Canto, chapter 1, text number 34 through 36. That is the nature of Nityamukti. And Nityabhata jivas, they are always thinking of Krishna as their competitor. Who is God? I am God. I will be the enjoyer. That is your nature. And therefore, Naraka Adi Dukkha, they always get to experience hellish existence. They're always revolving in samsara, getting a chance to experience hell. Because the whole material world is hell. Abramavadaloka Punaravachinorjuna. Mamu Petitukanteya Punarjamanavitate. The whole material world is hell. Because it's ephemeral, it's dukkhalaya, full of misery. So that's an important point Prabhupada said right here. Although they could conceivably consider themselves Narayana or Vishnu, they never do so. Understand? Are there any questions?
I thought your point about how even the Supreme Absolute has this conception of wanting to render service was really nice. And I was wondering if you could expand on a little bit in context of Lord Chaitanya coming to teach Prema Bhakti and taking on that position of being a servant of Krishna.
That's a long discussion. But his obvious point, Krishna himself, what to speak of his expansions. Krishna himself is, what is this Prema? He is also wondering, why am I so captivated by it? Why am I so much controlled by prema that I have to bow down to my devotees? I'm supposed to be Supreme Lord. But when my devotee comes before me, I cannot maintain my position as Supreme Lord. Just like this Kaviraj Goswami tells this story of Chaitanya Charitamrita, where the gopis were chasing after Krishna, and Krishna assumed a Narayana form, four arms. So when the gopis saw Narayana, they're all namaskar, you know, respects. Have you seen Krishna? Supreme Lord comes before you, but that is not so much interesting for them. Namaskar, respects is there. Have you seen Krishna? So Krishna with four arms, he said, he went that way. So the gopis just went running, leaving who they thought was Narayana was actually Krishna. But then Srimati Radharani came behind them, and then immediately two arms fell off, and Krishna was exposed. Such is the position of prema personified Srimati Radhika. And he could not control himself. So he also became bewildered by this. What is this prema bhakti? I also want to understand. I also want to taste this prema. Prema rasa niryasya karite aswadana. I also want to taste it. I also want to experience this. Just like if you watch a good movie, then sometimes they make the romantic relationship seem so wonderful. Isn't it? The music will come in right at the right time. And, you know, the slow movements of the faces towards one another, or they're dancing, and the fall leaves are falling off the trees, and it all looks very beautiful, and we become bewildered. Isn't it? And you say, I want to taste that. I want to gain that experience. So similarly, Krishna sees the love of his devotees, and he wants to gain that experience for himself. But he says, I have to become a devotee in order to taste that. I cannot stay in position as Supreme Lord, but I have to come in the position of a servant. Such is the position of servitude to Krishna. Understand? That the position is so amazing that it causes God to introspect. That's even possible. Krishna is omniscient. He doesn't require introspection. But when he sees prema acting, then immediately it causes Krishna himself to introspect. What to speak of his expansions, and what to speak of the tiny jivas who also gain within their hearts the attitude of service towards Krishna. So, 6th canto, 1st chapter, verse 34 to 36, probably, they could declare themselves Vishnu, but they never do so. And the only way we could think that they could do so is because we don't understand what is seva. We think we know what is seva. We don't know what is seva in this material world. We're trying to understand what is seva in this material world, but we do not know what is seva. Therefore, we tend to impose materialistic ideas onto the spiritual reality. The nature of seva is that just to conceive of yourself as a servant is an ocean of bliss. What to speak of doing service? In the material world, we have to be doing something before we feel blissful, isn't it? And we just sit and think, I am a servant. We said, that is no bliss in that. We don't think that is blissful. By that alone, we feel that we have to do something, something practical. But in just thinking that they are servant of Krishna, they go into ecstasy. Just thinking that way. Krishna dasa abhimana yaya nandasya. That is the nature of the conception. What to speak of actually serving Krishna. So we don't know what to say in this material world. We think we know. Seva is a very exalted thing. Seva causes God to introspect. So we should be careful when we think, well, we know what is seva. Seva can cause the Lord to introspect. What to speak of us? How much introspection we have to do to understand what is the nature of seva? If God, who is omniscient, has to introspect, what to speak of us, tiny little jivas? Such as the exalted position of servitude to Krishna. So we think, in the material world, service can get a little bit hackneyed, isn't it? Oh, every day I'm doing the same thing. Every day, same tune, Mangalarti is going on. Every day, same tunes. Every day, same deity worship. Like that, we think in this way sometimes. Sometimes it comes up, isn't it? What is this? Now I need a little variety. Like I said, if you were told eternally you will be a pot washer, immediately, not out of ecstasy, out of fear. So we don't know what is seva. Seva is a very exalted thing. It is not possible for Vaikunthavasis to the residents of the spiritual world, to ever desire the happiness. What to speak of material happiness? The happiness of Brahma Sukha multiplied a million times does not equal one drop of the Ananda Sindhu ocean of bliss that is the conception of servitude to Krishna. That's Brahma Sukha. Brahma Sukha is way above material happiness. The Brahma Sukha multiplied 10 million times does not equal one drop of the ocean of bliss that is the conception of servitude to Krishna. So what to speak of this material happiness? Who the hell will go after some material happiness, which is ephemeral and full of misery? Understand my point? Understand? Any other questions? Comments? No? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.